Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're looking at a topic that, again, resonates not just with Native Americans, but throughout the world as we find ourselves dealing with COVID-19 and related challenges. We're talking about leading through crisis and calming the storm. Our guest is Deke Copenhaver. Deke, it's great to have you with us.
David, it is a pleasure to be here with you today.
Now, the name Deke, D-E-K-E, this is not a name that a lot of us have heard frequently. Is there some history behind that?
There is definitely some history behind that. So when I was born, my older sister Lisa was two, and my real name's David. She said something that sounded like Deke, and my father had been friends with the youngest of five children. My dad flew B-17 bombers in World War II, but he was friends with Deke Slayton, the astronaut, knew him. And so he just started calling me Deke, and it stuck, and I've been Deke ever since.
Excellent, excellent. Well, it's great to have you on the show, Deke. And you've got an illustrious background. Not only do you have in your DNA that ability to lead through crisis and calm a storm, because I know a little bit about your background. Your father was quite an illustrious member of the armed services, wasn't he?
He was. And, you know, I will tell you, David, in situations like this, I like to put things into perspective, but I did a little research and posted something on Instagram the other day, a picture of my father during World War II. Well, he was a B-17 bomber pilot as a teenager, flying missions over Europe, and at one point, the mortality rate for B-17 bomber crews was 89%.
Whoa.
And so I look at that and think, you know, that shows me that's not just my DNA, that's our country's DNA, but we will be able to get through this. And just having that perspective, I think World War II might be the closest, you know, similarity to the situation we're going through. But I believe in, you know, in that we have that in our character.
Well, I appreciate that vision, and I know you've kind of leveraged that vision into other challenging situations in your own life. For those of my listeners who don't know you, and we do have a lot of listeners in the Southeast, and I know you've been fairly well recognized in that part of the country in addition to broader circles because of your writing and speaking, but tell us a little bit about your background as far as your own life.
Well, it's interesting. I served as mayor of Augusta for 9 years, but I grew up dreaming of becoming a writer. But when I went to college, I ended up majoring in business because that's what my father wanted me to do. So after graduating, I went into banking, then went into real estate and development and was a partner in the Sotheby's firm down in Beaufort, South Carolina, which is on the South Carolina coast. Ended up coming back to Augusta, running a nonprofit land conservation organization for 4 years, 9 years as mayor, and then subsequently started my own consulting firm, had a call-in radio show for a year, and then published the book, The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders, last year. So I jokingly tell people that I'm still trying to figure out what I want to do when I grow up.
Well, that's good. There's a lot of us like that. I mean, people look at my resume and they say, you know, actually, if they don't look at my resume and they ask me what I do for a living, I might be honest with them and say, well, I used to know how to answer that question, but I'm not sure whether to tell you I'm a radio host, a speaker, a consultant, an author, a physician. You know, you can relate, right?
I can relate completely. And I tell people that the greatest things that have happened in my life have not been planned. And it's... But one commonality of what I've done is I've gone where I've seen the greatest need. When I ran for office here in Augusta, I just saw a need for new, forward-thinking, unifying leadership. And when I had my radio show for a year, I felt like at that point in time, the city really needed a trusted voice. And I was term limited out, and so I, you know, still a relatively young guy. But it's the same thing with the book. I just think there is a real need now to demonstrate how ethical, principled, character-driven, trustworthy leadership can work, even in politics.
Well, and I think you're raising a lot of eyebrows because some people, when they hear, no, really, I mean, they hear trustworthy, they hear honesty, integrity, and they hear politics. I'm sure you've heard that before from other people, right? Those things often don't seem to go together.
No, and that's unfortunate. And a lot of people, that's the reaction that they've had with the book, is that they say, well, it's not at all what I thought it was going to be. And I can see that in that you have somebody who's a former politician, although I always consider myself a public servant, that they think the book's going to be on politics. Well, I'm happily independent. I have nothing to do with partisan politics. Frankly, hyper-partisan politics to me are just a bane on the existence of this country. Mm-hmm. But it's about leadership. But unfortunately, people don't associate politics and leadership together anymore, where at one point they did.
Wow. That is a sobering reality, I think. And I appreciate you coming to the table, Deke, and saying, hey, let's change the dialogue a little bit.
Absolutely. And it's interesting. So I did not realize before I wrote my book, and I know I've written books as well, but that there are 8,000 books a day published. And if I had known the odds against my book having success, I might not have written it in the first place. But the University of Texas El Paso's Student Engagement and Leadership Center found the book organically. So in the fall semester, they implemented it into a powerful pages program, which I had nothing to do with that. So all of a sudden, I see kids from UTEP throwing up selfies on Instagram reading my book. So I reached out to them and ended up speaking there 3 weeks ago yesterday, right before the world changed. But I video conferenced in for their last meeting on November 20th of last year, which was my birthday. And I had a young lady from, her name is EU, she's from Vietnam. She said, I have a tear in my eye because you've given me faith in government again.
Hmm. Well, tell us about this transition, really, from a businessman to someone who's a politician with a vision to really serve and make a difference in your community.
It's interesting. I grew up really prizing public service, and there were people on both sides of the aisle that I felt strongly I could look up to and emulate myself after, if I ever got into that world, which I had no inclination to do. But in 2004, I was going through a program called Leadership Georgia, which is the oldest statewide leadership program in the nation. And my graduation weekend, we had our third current or former local elected official go under indictment.
Wow.
And so I had somebody that was on the board of the organization who was our then governor's chief of staff look at me and say, what are you guys putting in the water up there? So I'm very competitive, and I was tired of hearing bad things about local politics on a statewide basis. So I just made the decision that if a position came available, I was going to run for it. And I did. And it's interesting. I was taken into a back room by local business leaders who I knew and know and respect to this day, but I was told not to run, that I had not paid my dues. Huh. And I said, look, I've chaired boards of directors. I've run a small business. You know, I've had all the leadership experience that I need, but I said, I'm going to run and I'm going to win if you guys are in the race or not. So I took it as a challenge, but it's sometimes, and I think that's the issue with politics, is oftentimes people want people in office that they can control, not who are truly leaders and can think for themselves.
That is really an interesting observation. So is it true you really ran as an independent?
Yes. So local elections in Georgia are nonpartisan, which that was tremendously helpful to me. And I never governed to the vocal minority. And so I didn't have to be. If I had to toe a party line and basically push an idea that I didn't agree with, I would be, I don't know how I would handle that. So, yes, it was great to being independent, and I'm to this day truly independent.
So let's bring all this experience to bear as far as what we're dealing with as a nation and as a world. So a lot of people are afraid. That translates into the tribal setting. It translates onto to reservations,
yes,
to Native community centers, workplaces. We have many listeners who are not Native, and everybody's dealing with this. How do you take your background in leadership and communicate something that's encouraging to people right here and now?
Well, I had to lead through many, many crises while I was in office, one being the financial meltdown in 2008 and the subsequent stimulus bill and administering stimulus funds in 2009 and beyond. But one thing that I always made sure to do was to keep my composure. And I make the analogy to people that if you're on a flight and you hit turbulence and the flight attendant looks like they're fine, then I don't panic. But if the flight attendant shows fear, then it passes that fear to me. So I'm always focused on maintaining my composure, because I think that's key for any leader in a crisis situation. But I also think that you need to make your decisions based on real-world data, and you need to be transparent and share those, really, that information with the people you serve. So we had a local economist that's with our local university that each month did a leading economic index. So that was tracking our economy locally real time, so I could make my decisions during the Great Recession based on his, you know, expertise data, and share that data with my constituents at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I think that's when we see decisions based around politics in a crisis situation, we need to be listening to the experts. And not that we don't need to listen to our political leaders, but you really, to your listeners, stay calm, but also seek out the best information you can possibly find.
So I know one of the things that drives conceptual lessons home to many people, and I've heard this many times from people that are my listeners, are illustrations, stories. As we're talking about this ability to give people confidence in the midst of challenge, do any stories come to your mind of either things that made an impact on you in your formative years and in your early career, or that you saw play out through your own public service?
I'll give you one example. So Joe Riley was the longtime mayor of Charleston, South Carolina. And I think they called him America's mayor, but he was a mentor of mine. And when they had the church shootings in Charleston, the way that Joe handled those and brought the community together in the wake of a tragedy and in a heartfelt way, this was authentic. This was who Joe was. I thought that he handled that magnificently. And so there are examples of good leadership, even politically in business, still out there, but we need to seek them. And I believe that times like these call forward great leadership.
I think that's such a great observation, because a lot of times we look at challenging situations and we say we would rather just, you know, have bypassed this one. But like you said, sometimes it takes those challenges to bring out the best in everyone. And if we can respond in a positive and constructive way, that can really change the game. That's, of course, where we want to go today on our interview, Deke. But before we step away for just a brief break, we're going to be talking in detail about your book, The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders. And if folks can't stay with us for the duration, I know they'll be missing out on a great interview, but how would someone connect with you or get some more insights into your book?
Through my website, Deke, D-E-K-E, dash, Copenhaver, Copenhaver.com. I think my cell phone's numbers are there even, which is a scary thing, but you guys can find me.
Okay, so again, if you are just hearing that for the first time, as I am, it's Deke Copenhaver. That's who our guest is. His website, www.deke-copenhaver. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're going to step away for just a couple of minutes. We will be back with more from Deke right after this. Don't go away.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
This is Betty White. I know you don't need one more thing to worry about, but listen. High blood pressure can cause kidney damage, blindness, heart attack, stroke, and you can have high blood pressure even if you feel all right. 1 in 7 adults has it, but it's easy to get your blood pressure checked, and you can treat it if it is too high. So don't worry about it. Don't ignore it. Just see your doctor and check it out.
For your free booklet, visit the Will Rogers Institute at wrinstitute.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue, possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
If you receive disability benefits, keeping Social Security informed is key. Keeping us informed minimizes the chance that we learn about something later that could negatively affect your benefits. That's the surprise no one wants because it creates overpayments that you must repay, disrupts payments, and can even jeopardize your entitlement to Social Security benefits. Learn more about reporting responsibilities for people working and receiving disability or SSI benefits by reading our online publications, Working While Disabled, How We Can Help, and How Work Affects Your Benefits at www.socialsecurity.gov/pubs. Some changes can be reported online at www.socialsecurity.gov. You can also notify us at 1-800-772-1213 or contact your local Social Security office. Our goal at Social Security is to pay you the right amount on time every month. With your cooperation to keep us informed of changes, the likelihood of any unpleasant surprises that could derail your benefits will be greatly minimized.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
You're back with Dr. David DeRose on today's edition of American Indian Living. My guest today, Deke Copenhaver. Deke served as the mayor of Augusta, Georgia for some 9 years. He is a consultant. He's got a background in business and radio. He is the author of The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders. Deke, one of the things that I got to tell you, I think most people listening, if they're at all like me, they may not have ever been to Augusta, Georgia, but they hear Augusta, Georgia, and they immediately think golf. Is that a proper association to make?
It is, and we are proud to be home of the Masters Golf Tournament, the only major held in the same spot every year. So that's a great part of our community, but there's so much more to it. We also host the North America's largest half Ironman event every year. We are home to U.S. Army Cyber Command is moving to our local military base, Fort Gordon. So it's golf is a big part of Augusta, but it's not all that we do. We're also home to James Brown, you know, the godfather of soul, Jesse Norman, the youngest ever Kennedy Center honoree. So there's a lot more to it, but hey, we're glad that we are a world-renowned name associated with quality due to the golf tournament we have every spring, as well as, you know, our musical legends and for so many more things.
So one of the things that we're speaking about, of course, is crises and crises management. And I think one of the things that's got to be challenging for a mayor is where you have something that is such a national and international draw, and you have this amazing uptick in visitors and, you know, lodging challenges, transportation challenges. What has that experience given you as far as insight into dealing with something like what we're facing today with a pandemic?
Well, it's interesting when, say, an example of when James Brown passed. That was my first year in office, which wasn't a pandemic in this situation, but people thought, you know, how is Augusta, Georgia, city of 200,000, going to plan a homegoing service for the Godfather of Soul, I mean, world-renowned music legend, in a matter of days? And I said, well, we host the Masters every year, so we know how to do staging for big events. But in dealing with difficult situations like this, the fact that we host an event of that magnitude every year, I think is going to help us in the long run. My final year in office, I basically thought, well, you know, 2014, it's my last year. I've been in for 8 years. I'm going to have a cakewalk to the end. Well, that February, we had the storm of the century, an ice storm that hit here in Augusta in our community. And actually, several days later, had a miniature earthquake. But we were able to pull together as a community, and there was no loss of life. But once again, it was my position in that situation was to maintain the calm at the center of the storm. And one of the things that I think that your listeners need to know, and it goes back to, in crisis situations, information flow is key. So one of the lessons that I learned during that, we had major power outages, but I set up basically, you know, everybody's having to go remote now. Well, I set up a mobile command post in my kitchen because that's what I had to do at first, and stayed in contact with the governor's office, with the power companies. And what I realized is in the midst of having power outages, people still had their phones. Mm-hmm. So I used Twitter to get out accurate information from the governor's office, from the power companies, to the citizens, when at that point they had no real other way of getting it. So those are just some of the lessons that I learned. But I will say this too, you can't count on the government to do everything in this situation. And it's really, my opinion is, it's here facing an ice storm, citizens pulled together. They helped each other. I know we're in situations where we have to practice social distancing, but there are things we can do when we feel powerless. Just checking in with people in this situation who live by themselves, particularly the elderly, is absolutely key. And if they need food or supplies, you know, you can drop them off at their house. But there are things we as local citizens can do. And I firmly believe that the communities that really pull together in this situation will be the ones that come out faster.
No, I mean, that is such a powerful message. And I know in Indian country, we think of more closely knit communities, and sometimes that's true. You know, many Native Americans who might live on a reservation, but others are maybe isolated, at least from other people that they have close Native ties with. They may be living in an urban area, and so it's not a homogenous group at all. So our listeners today, whether they're Native, whether they're not Native, as they're listening to what we're talking about, I think all of us can say, even though we may not feel that people are necessarily looking out for us individually, what I'm hearing you say, Deke, is all of us, in a sense, can be leaders, and we can take a lead in looking out for people that are more marginalized than us, even if we're feeling marginalized. Is that a fair takeaway?
That's a beautiful takeaway. And we really need to be compassionate of our communities, our neighbors, our families in this situation, and just focus on being a caregiver. In this situation, to be a caregiver is to be a leader. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I'll tell you, David, that concerns me, as I'm sure it does you, and it applies to any community. I mean, it applies on the reservation, it applies in neighborhoods, is that in a situation where I think about people who have mental illness and dealing with this situation, we lost my sister-in-law last fall, who was special needs and had issues with seizures. But my wife and I have discussed that I can't imagine. So she was 57 years old, but I can't imagine in her state that she was in, and she was a beautiful, wonderful woman, but how she would respond to this. And so I'm thinking empathetically, but what if Catherine, my wife's sister, who she was primary caregiver for years, if we couldn't see her, right. You know, and what that would do to her. So I think being compassionate, but I think about the most low income people are the people that are going to get hurt the worst. And I was telling somebody the other day, that I'm hearing my friends talk about how difficult it is to homeschool their kids. But I think about, you know, a single mother from a low-income population who loses her job and she's got three kids, and then she has to homeschool those kids as well. You know, we need to consider others in this situation tremendously, particularly those of us that are still, we're well, we're able-bodied, we might be having to stay home, social distance, but there are things we can do to help. And I think that that helps me in this situation too, to know that I don't have to, I have to be smart, I have to be safe, but that doesn't mean that I can't help others in the situation.
No, those are great points. One of the interesting things to me, Deke, one of the things I appreciate about your nonpartisan approach is sometimes it seems that our ability to strategize and work together is clouded by those partisan divides. And I've, as a physician, as a public health professional, have been dismayed to see again that our missteps as a country, and you know, everyone in the public health community agrees there's things we could have done better, but that's all in retrospect. I mean, we had this first SARS episode back in 2002, 2003, and it never really caused any serious disruption here in America. And I think a lot of people were thinking, hey, you know, we don't need to be that that vigilant. We can be more more reactive, because that has seemed to work with past epidemics. But this COVID-19 has proved all but that, and everyone's pointing fingers at this point. But sometimes it seems like that really gets in the way of us working together. Is that just my vantage point, or do you see things similarly?
I agree completely, and I have a quote in the book that I've often said is that one thing I do know is that it's physically impossible to join hands and work together when you're only focused on pointing fingers and placing blame.
Whoa.
And although we have to social distance at this point, we can still join together and work together. And that sitting around placing blame and pointing fingers does not do any good.
So let's come back to your book, The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders. And although some folks might say, well, that's an interesting topic, but right now we're just trying to survive. We're not so worried about building leaders. But what I've been hearing you say, Deke, is all of us need to kind of raise our game and develop our leadership skills, because that's what's needed in communities everywhere.
Absolutely, David. And it's interesting. So back during the fall, I had a lady that I'm connected to on LinkedIn, Carrie Grace, who is a regional development CEO in New South Wales. And so she posted something on LinkedIn about what it was like dealing with the bushfires. So I posted an encouraging remark. Well, she let me know that she had read my book and that she was using it as a tool in dealing with the bushfires.
Wow.
Well, we have stayed in touch, and she and her colleague Zoe Ether and I, who's a great smart communities guru in Australia, who actually visited me here at Augusta to discuss the book, but we had a Zoom meeting last Saturday. And to know that Carrie used the book, here again, she found it on her own, but to help her in dealing with that situation. And I will tell you, that just shows me what a global community we are.
Yes, that's really amazing. We truly are a global community. And we want you, who are listening today on American Indian Living, to stay a part of our community. We have to step away for just a couple of moments, but we will be back with more from Deke Copenhaver. He'll be speaking about his book, The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders, and why that is relevant for you. More right after this.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
So, you want to be a hero. Here are some ways to get the job. Hunt down that killer shark. Or run into a burning house to save a kitten. Luckily, there's an easier way to become a hero. Call 911 if you see someone experiencing the symptoms of stroke, sudden weakness on one side, or trouble speaking, walking, or seeing. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. You'll be a real hero. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
Diabetes affects more than 29 million Americans. If left untreated, diabetes can lead to serious health problems such as heart disease, stroke, blindness, and kidney disease. Your family's health history can be an important factor in determining your risk of developing diabetes. The National Diabetes Education Program wants to help you and your family. Do all you can to prevent or delay the onset of type 2 diabetes. Visit yourdiabetesinfo.org to learn more.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to the second half of today's edition of American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose with Deke Copenhaver. Deke has been sharing with us insights into leadership. He's not one of these guys who just took a bunch of classes and got a doctorate and now is telling everyone how to lead. He is someone who has actually been a leader in a number of capacities, including serving as the mayor of Augusta, Georgia. He's been sharing his practical life lessons. And Deke, as we were speaking about your book, The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders, you were telling us a story at the end of the last segment, before we had to step away, specifically about how you had providentially, if you will, gotten connected with folks out in Australia. You were trying to encourage them as they were dealing with those bushfires. Tell us how that all played out.
Well, so we actually, Carrie Grace, the regional development CEO in New South Wales, we had a conference call or a Zoom call last Saturday to discuss how we can further continue to work together, along with Zoe Ether, a colleague of hers, who's now a friend of mine as well. But it made me realize, and you touched on it in the break, on a global community. We are a global community, and we can help each other. But I will tell you, and I talked at the beginning of the show about putting things into perspective. So here I have a colleague in Australia that started dealing with the bushfires in October, and to come out of that and to go right into COVID-19 is, talk about somebody who's inspirational and has maintained a good positive attitude at the same time. So we can look for, and that's, I talk in the book about the fact that the only real power that any true leader should concern themselves with is the power to inspire. Because no individual can do something all by themselves, but if you can inspire people to work with you, there's no obstacle that you can't overcome.
So, Deke, you're sharing a lot of practical insights for us and folks today, whether they're looking at challenges in the workplace, challenges in their communities, challenges in their home, challenges at a government level. Folks are saying, you know, we want information and individuals that we can trust. We want to be those kind of trustworthy individuals. At least I hope most people are saying that as well. And
yes,
you've got a website, Deke, D-E-K-E, hyphen Copenhaver, C-O-P-E-N-H-A-V-E-R. If someone goes to that website, are they going to find resources that would help them on this journey?
They will. They will. And one thing that I always believe in doing the right thing, and I've shared with people that in my business or in this book, it's mission and message before money, but several weeks ago, I dropped the price of the book on Amazon down to 99 cents a download.
Wow.
Because I really, and basically that came after my friend Carrie from Australia contacted me a while back as we were setting up our Zoom call from last weekend, but she said, your book needs to be in every classroom right now. And so I thought, if it helped her in a leadership position in Australia, I want to make it available to as many people as possible, you know, for this situation that we're dealing with now here. So that's, but it's important for me to reach out and mentor that next generation of leaders, because I don't think the politics as usual that we've seen played out that are so hyper-partisan, I don't think that's sustainable. But I go back to the local community level. I think if change is really going to happen, positive change, it's got to start at the local level. But we need ethical, trustworthy leadership in all leadership positions. We need it in business. We need it in politics. We need it in the nonprofit world. you know, it's just important in every sector of our society.
So as an author who's published things on Kindle, on Amazon's ebook platform, just for the record, my understanding is you can't make a book cheaper than 99 cents.
You are correct in that. But it's interesting. To me, leadership is about doing the right thing. And it's, I'll give you another example. So in 2010, which was the last year that I ran for office, we were at the height of the recession. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if people don't know me after doing this for 5 years, then they probably won't get to know me. But I thought families and nonprofits need money more than my campaign does now. So I publicly asked people to give money to local nonprofits rather than giving to my campaign.
Wow.
Which, you know, a political strategist would say is crazy, but I've won with 64% of the vote by doing the right thing.
Tremendous, tremendous. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate this, and I know there's folks out there that are fact-checking me, and they're going on Amazon right now and seeing all those free books. But my understanding is you can just do that for a short time, because Amazon, understandably, by running the platform, is wanting to get some return. So you can make a book free for a while, but for a long-term price, 99 cents, so that's the best bargain you're going to get. And tell us why we want that book. Why do you want me to fork out that whopping amount of 99 cents and pick up the Changemaker?
Well, it's what people have told me is it's refreshing and it's relevant. It's an easy read. I had a friend of mine that I met in passing, who's in the Air Force. He's now stationed in Japan. And we met a number of years ago before in passing, just a one-time meeting. But he shared with me how much that meeting meant to him, and that he had actually purchased the book. And then he emailed me today, and he had read it, he said, almost in a matter of hours. He just sat down and couldn't put it down. But I hope that in this situation, it gives people hope, because we all need hope right now. And if, you know, that type of leadership politically can work here in Augusta, it can work any place.
So I know we've already been talking about topics that no doubt you've addressed in your book, but give us some other bullet points. What are some other take-home messages for folks who will never pick up the book? They may not be readers, but they say, look, I'm hearing the message. I realize these are challenging times. I may not feel I'm a leader, but I realize there are people looking up to me, whether it's family, whether it's neighbors, whether it's folks, I'm sitting on a tribal council. Those folks would, of course, realize that they are in a leadership position. But I'm thinking, regardless of whether it's a formal leadership position or folks are saying, I need to raise my game a bit, what kind of pointers can you give us today?
Well, one of the things I would say is just be consistent in your leadership. And another, so I have 7 attributes of change-making leaders that I've identified, which are creativity, courage, connecting, transparency, composure, character, and listening, which listening is key. But in leadership roles, in any leadership role, being a good listener is key. But I go back to the attribute of character. Character is so important to me. And to all your listeners out there, you're all leaders. If anybody looks to you in this time of crisis, you're a leader, whether you like it or not. But character is extremely important. And I would share with people that when you see people compromise their character to get ahead in business or in politics, I would prefer not to. I mean, I'm never going to compromise my character, because when you compromise your character, you've totally fundamentally eroded your ability to lead efficiently and effectively. So character matters.
Mm. Talk to the person who may feel that hasn't been a priority. Maybe they've cut corners. Is there hope for them? I mean, if they look back and they say, well, maybe I haven't prioritized character, is there a way to redeem myself?
There is, and we can all change. I'm not the same person that I was when I was 22 years old. I'm 52 now. But I think to keep an open mind and always be willing to listen and to change when necessary, to pivot when necessary. I tell people there's an old saying that a mind is like a parachute. It works best when it's open. So I think if we start to close our minds and let our personal biases influence us too much, that's when, you know, you get stuck in a rut. That's not a good position to be in, because in a fast-changing world, you've got to be adaptable to change. So there is hope, but it begins with trust, because I've shared with people that in leadership positions, you need to focus on maintaining the public trust or the trust of those you serve from the get-go, because when things are calm and profitable, you know, I think if people don't trust your leadership then when you hit a crisis situation, you fundamentally undermine your ability to lead through crisis.
I'll tell you, these are sobering remarks, and some folks may feel that they're already challenged because of their past history. How do they raise their game right now when there's missteps that they've made? But like you're saying, sometimes leaders, it seems, are made, if you will, in the midst of crises, aren't they?
They absolutely are. And, you know, none of us are perfect. I was doing an interview the other day, and we were talking about Winston Churchill, who I believe is one of the greatest leaders of all time. But Churchill dealt with depression. And so he was flawed. He was imperfect. But he was a great leader. And I think that really his leadership during World War II, I think it was the war itself that called forth those great leadership skills in him.
Mm-hmm. Now, here's an interesting thing. You know, you mentioned that list of seven attributes, and one of those attributes sometimes seems to be at cross purposes, with maybe some of the things we're trying to achieve. Let me explain. So you mentioned creativity. I know there's a challenge, especially in times of crises, when someone is trying to think creatively, that maybe if they're being transparent and they're sharing how they're processing things, that maybe people will take issue and they'll say, you're going down the wrong direction. And sometimes in today's world, where it seems like so many people, their opinion of someone will hinge on one tweet or one soundbite.
Yeah.
People, it seems, are reluctant sometimes to both be transparent and share what might be a creative solution. It's creative because no one else is talking about it. And then they feel like they're running the danger of being branded as someone who's either insensitive or out of touch. How do you pull all that together?
Wow, that's a very good question, David. But when I say creativity, so I grew up writing and painting and I had an arts-based education. So it taught me to look at solving problems from all sides, whereas I think oftentimes politically it's either our way or your way, either this or that. But as I mentioned to you during the ice storm, deciding to tweet out good information was both creative and transparent at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive, but that's one thing I caution leaders to in crisis situations: vet your information before you share it with people you serve, because and don't make decisions in vacuums. Oftentimes in leadership position, the buck has got to stop here, but I learned to surround myself with professionals and listen to the experts before I made any decision. And while I was in office for 9 years, I still do that because, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an epidemiologist. I can tell you that we will make it through this, but I would encourage people out there, given the financial situation facing businesses, listen to your accountants, listen to the professionals that are dealing with this on a daily basis.
No, great messaging. We do have to step away. We're going to be back with a final segment with Deke. Deke is sharing with us insights from his book, The Changemaker, The Art of Building Better Leaders, and how it applies to us today. You don't want to miss our concluding insights. We'll also give you contact information about Deke and his resources. I'm Dr. David DeRose. More right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
One day, I'll teach chemistry to kids.
I'm going to be an architect.
My dream is to be a chef.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we provide more than $150 billion each year in grants, loans, and work study funds, making higher education possible for anyone at any stage of life.
I can go back to college. I can change careers.
I can make a difference.
Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more about money for college at studentaid.gov.
Diabetes is a serious disease that runs in families. If your parents or siblings have type 2 diabetes, you have a greater chance of getting the disease. If you're African American, Hispanic, or Latino, American Indian, Alaska Native, Asian American, Native Hawaiian, or Pacific Islander, you also have a higher chance of developing the disease. The National Diabetes Education Program wants to help you understand your risk. Visit the NDEP website at yourdiabetesinfo.org for diabetes prevention tools, including the Family Health History Quiz.
It started off as a normal day. I felt fine when I arrived at the plant.
Ruth Junius's life was about to change.
Then I dropped my keys. They kept slipping out of my hand. My arm felt numb. A coworker asked me if I was okay, and I couldn't speak. I started to get scared.
Ruth was having a stroke. People around her weren't sure what to do.
They thought I should go home or lie down, but I knew something was very wrong. I wrote 911 on a piece of paper with my other hand, and someone called for me.
Because everyone acted quickly, doctors at the hospital were able to give Ruth treatment that started to reverse the symptoms.
Within a few minutes, I was talking again. I didn't know a thing about stroke before I had one. Now I make sure that my friends and family know all the signs of stroke so they'll get help fast if they need it.
No stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. Call 1-800-352-9424 for more information. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living, Dr. David DeRose. We're concluding our interview with Deke Copenhaver. Deke has been trying to help us see how leadership skills are so critical for every single one of us in the challenging times in which we find ourselves. Deke, we've been talking a lot about leadership, and one of the things that I find people love is just some way of assessing how they're doing. Do I understand you actually have a formal assessment on your website?
I do, as a matter of fact. And so you can take it and you'll get your results, but it gives you an idea of where you stand on with regards to becoming a change-making leader, or are you already a change-making leader? So I think that that should be helpful to your listeners.
So basically, if I go to Deke Copenhaver, and again, that's D-E-K-E hyphen Copenhaver, Copenhaver.com. I just go to that website and I'll see information about this change-making leader assessment?
Yes.
Okay. And how long a process is that?
Oh, it's just a few minutes. It's nothing that somebody can... And hey, we'll have a little extra time on our hands these days.
Okay, fair enough. So if someone's wondering what to do after listening to this radio interview, go to DeekCopenhaver.com. Make sure you got a hyphen between Deke and Copenhaver, and look for that change-making leader assessment. So let me just ask you, before I venture there, because I've not been to your website, this interview was arranged on fairly short notice, so a lot of times I will like to check out resources before I have a guest on, but in today's world, sometimes things are just speeding by as slowly as other things
yes.
may seem to be moving. Anyway, though, Deke, if
yes.
I do take this assessment, and let's say I got a really bad score, am I likely to be severely deflated and without any hope of making those changes?
No. And once again, I think that some people might have more leadership traits in their DNA than others, but just some simple things. Being a change-making leader means being willing to go against the status quo. You know, I was told when I first was running for office that I wouldn't get 6% of the vote.
Wow.
But if I had listened to people, but I'd been out there at the grassroots level and I knew people were ready for, you know, a different type of unifying leadership. But it takes courage. And one of the things I would share with your listeners is vulnerability is a strength. It's not a weakness.
Hmm.
You know, it takes more courage to stand up and really share what you're feeling with people than it does to hide your feelings. And frankly, vulnerability. I did an interview and somebody said, well, you can be vulnerable while you're in office. I said, yeah. And they said, all the time. I said, I was for 9 years, but that's what connected me to people. I didn't act like I had all the answers. You know, when dealing with tragedies, I mean, murders or different situations in the community, I spent time with the families. Mm-hmm, so vulnerability, when most people think it's a weakness, it's a strength. And truthfully, right now, we as a society, we're all vulnerable. And here again, the humanity of having to deal with a global pandemic connects us all.
No, I mean, that is such a welcome message. And I think sometimes people feel like if they're going to be a good leader, they have to give this aura of having all the answers. But if you don't have all the answers, and in fact, none of us do, that's a pretty dangerous position to put yourself in, isn't it?
It fundamentally is. And I tell people, and for your listeners, that it's in leadership positions, to me, it's more important to know what you don't know than what you do know. And to surround yourself with people that know more than you on any given topic. And it's a dangerous thing if you want to portray an image of that you do have all the answers, particularly now when nobody does, as you may mention of. That, I do think that's a dangerous thing. We need to be listening to the experts in this situation.
So let's transition back to Augusta. And, you know, we're talking about people who've got all the answers. And I'll tell you, one of the stereotypes of athletes is that some of them, you know, have an aura like, you know, everything revolves around them. And of course, we don't want to mention any names, but some people would say, well, that sounds like it must have been very challenging to deal with a lot of folks who may think the world kind of revolves around them. Is that the reality? I mean, are there those unique challenges of not only dealing with the general public, but dealing with the professionals, the athletes who would at least call Augusta home for a small segment of the year?
You know, and it's easy to stereotype and paint with a broad brush, but most of the professional athletes, most of the entertainers that I've met are pretty much down-to-earth people, but you have certain people that give everybody a bad rap, and mm-hmm. You know, that's with anything. But no, generally, professional athletes that I've found have been pretty easy to deal with. And you know, everybody's going through this together. They might be better able to absorb the financial impact of this. But I think about, you know, there are guys out there, particularly on the PGA Tour, that might be at the lower end of the spectrum, that their livelihood from a sponsorship perspective, from everything, has just been totally cut off. Mm-hmm. And same thing I tell people with entertainers, with musicians that aren't world famous that can just make a living. The entertainment industry, you know, it's across the board people are being impacted.
So talk to some of those folks. I mean, what kind of options are there out there? What kind of options are there not only for them to sustain themselves, but also to feel like they can lead anyone when they're feeling defeated, when they're wondering how they can make a living? What do you say to someone like that?
Well, it's a scary time. And I would say here again, you know, the federal government has passed this stimulus bill, which should provide help to families, to businesses. So be patient. Help is on the way in that regard. I'm not sure what that's going to look like exactly. When I was in office, the stimulus package was $841 billion. This is $2.2 trillion. But just to stay calm, that it is going to get better. And here again, it makes you feel better, I think, if you can help somebody else. So if you're in a position to help somebody else at this point in time, do it. It makes you feel better to feel like you're not powerless, and it helps somebody out that needs it the most right now.
No, that is great. Yeah, looking out for others and really realizing the power of kindness. You've been doing
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
You've been doing that, Deke, I know that, in different ways. One of the ways is you're a blogger, and folks who've been listening, I know many of them have already been sold on the reasonable price of the Changemaker. They may already have gone to Kindle while they've been listening and picked up a copy for that 99-cent price tag. But others are wanting to keep in touch with you. Tell us a little bit about how someone could access your blog.
I do a regular blog for Forbes. My book publisher is Forbes Books, and so I blog for Forbes regularly. I do a monthly column on leadership for the Georgia Municipal Association here in Georgia that they can go, and there's a backlog of those, so they can go to, I believe it's gma.net, or it might be, I think they changed it to georgiacities.net or .org, but you can find all my stuff there. So I'm not hard to find, but just I'll keep putting information out there because I think it's key right now.
So, Deke, if we go to the website, are there links on the website to some of the other things you've written?
There are. There are, and to different interviews I've done, different podcasts, different TV interviews. So there should be a whole lot of content there for people to sift through.
So if there's folks like me who've become more of a fan of Deke Copenhaver, never having met you before, but if we want to listen to more, we can just remember that name, we can find your website.
You can find my website. That's the fortunate thing is I think I've never met another Deke Copenhaver in this world, so it's probably good at this point doing what I do to have an unusual name.
Okay, so if you can't remember the website, just remember the name, stick it in a search engine. And where is it going to point them, Deke? Give us that website one more time.
It's deke-copenhaver.com. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. You can find me there as well. So reach out to me. And during these times, I'm happy to help your listeners, talk them through things, whatever I can do.
Well, and I've heard something interesting. I don't know if this is true or not, but I thought I had heard that your phone number is even on your website.
Yeah, I think it actually is, which is scary at this point. But here again, it's about transparency. And I really want to do whatever I can within my power to help people right now. Obviously, none of us are doing speaking engagements, but I think if you do the right thing, you take the big picture view, everything, I've got to run a small business myself, but I need to do the right thing more than anything right now to me, because it's just that important.
Deke, thank you so much for sharing your expertise. Again, Deke's website, Deke, D-E-K-E, hyphen, Copenhaver, Copenhaver.com. Deke, before we run, any final words?
Just to all your listeners, we will get through this. Just trust me, we will. It's not going to be easy. It's going to be painful, but stay positive and keep a good attitude. Stay healthy and stay safe.
Thanks so much for your encouragement. We've got to run. For all of us at American Indian Living, I'm Dr. David DeRose, wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.